Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
And welcome to the program. It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. A pleasant good afternoon, folks. Tyler Friel with you, in for Dave Malarkey, alongside Kayla Moles and the It's Your Turn program. You can, of course, listen to us on the dial at WISR 680 AM or online at WISR680.com, and you can take us on your smartphone now. We are on the Google Play Store as well as the iTunes Store, so there's a variety of ways that you can listen to the program, and of course, you can listen to it on demand. If an hour and a half of us isn't enough and you want to replay it, you have that ability to do so.
I do have to step in for a second. Breaking news, the sun is out.
Yes, I have.
We have not
seen
the sun in 6 days.
Really?
And it's out. We haven't. It's been so cloudy and rainy.
You never really know inside the next-tier studios. We don't really have a lot of windows in here.
We do not.
So it's great news to hear that the sun is out. And anyways, we got a full slate of guests today, but no sense of making our first guest wait. He is Ed Mock. He's the Executive Director of the Housing Authority for Butler County and the Redevelopment Authority as well. Ed, thanks so much for taking the time. Pleasure to have you here. How are you doing?
Well, first of all, let me thank you very much for the invitation, and I'm very happy to be here. And I am happy that the sun is out. It's been a long time coming.
This is Ed's first time on the show, and usually we're filling in for our colleague. His name's Dave Malarkey, and usually he gets all the first-timers. So we're kind of excited to have somebody for the first time.
He may not be as excited that there's some the guest hosts are in here, instead of the savvy veteran like Dave. But nonetheless, Ed, we're happy you made the time. So Executive Director of the Housing Authority for Butler County and the Redevelopment Authority, and we're going to get into exactly what the role is of both those entities. But first, relatively new on the job, not quite new, but you've been in the job for how long now?
I've matured a little bit on the job. I'm coming up on my third year.
Okay.
Finishing the third year here this month, actually.
Oh, wow.
Will be my third year here.
Okay. So you were hired in 2015, late August, early September,
September 2015.
Okay, September.
Got the date.
Before that, I know that you spent quite some time at Pittsburgh's Housing Authority. Tell us about that.
I was, I've been in the housing field with housing authorities for upwards of 20 plus years. I'm born and raised in central Pennsylvania, and I ended up starting my career in the housing authorities with the Altoona Housing Authority.
Okay.
In Altoona, Pennsylvania, and worked my way through. I've been in Fayette County, down in Uniontown, in Fayette County Housing Authority.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a couple years there, and then I made my way out to sunny San Diego, where the weather is never as
the sun
overcast.
Is always out.
The sun is always out. When it rains, it's a holiday because you don't see it very much. But spent quite a few years out in San Diego before coming back to the Pittsburgh Housing Authority as their chief financial officer, and I spent the best part of a decade working with them.
Okay.
Before coming to Butler and taking over the organization here.
How has your time in Butler been? I know we were talking just a couple moments ago before we started that Butler County is such a diverse county with all the, you know, everything that's happening in the south and then in the north still being really rural. So that's been kind of new for you?
It is. I mean, my background is from all
it sounds like.
I mean, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania, very rural, very country, and then spent some time in two major cities, you know, with San Diego and Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I kind of tend to like the rural. It's a little more laid back. And, but what's nice about Butler County is you do have that diversity where you have a suburban center, essentially, you know, on the 79 corridor, if you will, and but still have the solitude and the real country environment to the north. Mm-hmm. It makes it very nice.
Mm-hmm. What drew you to the position whenever it opened? Was there a certain indication?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, we at the Pittsburgh Housing Authority, we were tapped to provide some financial assistance to help with them, because there was a lot of turnover. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, I don't want to get into all of that, but there was some turnover. So they had an executive director come in from Erie, and they had asked us, the local HUD office asked us if we could provide some financial help. So me and members of my team came up to kind of help with the financials during the transition, and it just morphed into, I threw my hat in the ring for the job and mm-hmm. was fortunate enough to be selected for the position.
Yeah, the Housing Authority did go through a kind of interesting time, I guess you could say, back in 2015 with their former director being accused of using public resources for personal endeavors. And again, we don't have to go into all of that, but right. Can you assure the public that that's all been set aside and that things are going smoothly now?
To my knowledge, everything is going very smoothly. I mean, we are obviously still working out of some of those circumstances mm-hmm. and situations. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's been an encompassing part of my first 3 years, but we've pretty much turned the corner mm-hmm. and are just working forward with the entity, the Housing Redevelopment Authority.
Well, let's dive into then Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Like you said, they're almost like two separate entities, yet at the same time, you're operating as almost the CEO of both.
Yeah, I mean, I am the CEO of both entities. They are separate legal entities, but they pretty much focus around affordable housing. I mean, that's the nature of the activities that occur within both entities.
So what does, I don't want to say what a normal day looks like for you, because I'm sure they're kind of pulling you
there
each
is
and
no
every
normal
way.
Day.
Yeah. But if you could kind of describe what your job is to the listeners and what are the things you're overseeing?
Well, I mean, my job is, I have the pleasure of working with about 35 professionals in the deliverance of affordable housing. I mean, we manage nearly 700 units of housing that we manage, maintain. So we have all of the maintenance, all the property management, and all of the resident activities and coordination of a very, very large property management company. We receive funding from HUD to do capital improvements. So there's a lot of, capital activity that occurs as well. And there really is no typical day. I mean, if you can imagine, this week started off with a bang because we had 4 or 5 days of rain and mm-hmm. that inundated the area with many, many inches of rain. And so, of course, we started the week with cleanup activity mm-hmm. and trying to abate those types of situations, because you have that much rain, even the best maintained properties will get some leakage and some water. So we were cleaning water up early in the week, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how the week started. Mm-hmm. And so, to say there is no typical day, I mean, we get different needs from individuals, from time to time, but, it keeps it challenging and it keeps it interesting.
Where are most of your units? You said you had 700. Are they mostly in the city of Butler, or are they spread out throughout the county?
We have a concentration that is in Butler, but we are spread out throughout the county. Mm-hmm. And those nearly 700 units consist of, a variety. We have public housing units that are funded by HUD, mm-hmm. That are, some are elderly, some are family-oriented. We have programs that are funded by different sources. We have tax credit properties that have some different rules and all that. We have even have a partnership with homeless properties with the VA, with our Deshaun Place property that's mm-hmm. on the VA grounds, the old VA grounds, mm-hmm. I should say. Mm-hmm. But we are scattered throughout the city and the county. I mean, we have a predominance in Butler, but we have properties in Evans City, Zelianople. We have properties in Slippery Rock. We have properties in Chicora. We have properties in Cranberry. And we even have a property in Armstrong County just over the line in Parker that we manage.
Wow. Okay.
So we're all over. And that creates some challenges for our team. I mean, obviously, we struggle with the funding, as most entities do, mm-hmm. but yet we are covering a very vast county. I mean, to get from Parker in the northwestern corner to Cranberry in the south, that's a haul.
Yeah.
But yet we go through the process and we do it as best we can.
Are you near 100% full, or what's usually your capacity?
We We are very close to 100% full. Some of our programs have significant waiting lists. So, like, for example, our most popular property is Rolling Road in Cranberry, and we have a very long waiting list with that property. Other properties, the waiting list is much shorter, but we do have a waiting list, and it's a matter of when we have vacancies, we turn the units, and we're pretty much there. I mean, at times it feels like there's an infinite need, and always there is always finite resources, and so that's the balancing act we're always faced with in managing property.
Is there a high turnover rate in terms of residency?
Not really, not really. I mean, it's all relative, but we don't have a lot of a high turnover rate.
If people are listening, and again, we're talking to Ed Mock, he's the Chief Executive Officer for the Butler County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. How do people apply to stay in one of your locations? I know that there's a ton of information out there, but sometimes it gets lost, and where do I go first?
Yeah, if you want to get to us, I mean, there are, you know, several ways you can get, if you need information, our website is a great resource. It's www.housingauthority.com. Very easy to remember. Housingauthority.com is the website. We are located at 114 Woody Drive in the Pullman Plaza here in Butler. You can stop in for information there, or you can call our offices at 724-287-6797. And that is the best way to find out what programs are available, you know, to your particular situation. I mean, to get into what each program is, and you know, I could take the rest of the day, and I would need a lot more prep time for that. But we could, maybe down the road we do some of that on a case by case basis. But you know, generally speaking, you know, if you're low to moderate income and you have housing needs, we probably have a product that can help. We have products ranging from the affordable housing that we own and manage. We have a housing assistance voucher program, which is traditionally has been known as Section 8. And we have a very large Section 8 program with over 1,500 units. And that's a voucher program where you rent on the private market. And then we manage that program, and we absorb a portion of the rent. But then we have programs for homeowners. If you have, you know, rehabilitation needs and you can't afford it, I mean, there are programs out there that we can help with. And again, we're constrained only by the resources that we're able to go out and obtain.
Let's talk about resources then. How are you guys funded and all those different things?
Okay. Our main funding, I mean, we operate with about an $18 million annual budget. The predominance of that money comes from basically the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, and or the rents that we receive. So even though it's public housing, I mean, we still obtain rents, and we get rather decent rents, and then the government subsidy fills in the gap. But the bulk of our funding comes from HUD. That's where most of our rules come from, and that's the housing authority operations. You know, public housing, Section 8, the capital programs, those kind of programs are all really funded by HUD. On the redevelopment authority side, it's more county and state-driven funding. Even though, you know, the money passes through the county, it pretty much comes a lot from the same sources. Like, for example, HUD has a federal home program that basically provides funding to the state provides it to the county, and then we get it through the subrecipient process. And so there's a lot of programs out there that work that are that way. And then with the county, there is a fund, Act 137, which is recorder of deed fees, that a portion of those get applied to affordable housing. And we really use that mostly to match, to be able to apply to get other grants to bring money into the county. And then we use, you know, local contractors to perform work that money funds. So it brings money into the county and then circulates it in the local economy.
On the housing authority side, and with HUD, that's obviously federally funded, which I know can bring about its own challenges. And one of those is medical marijuana. And we've seen some interesting instances with that because Pennsylvania, we know it's legal to obtain medical marijuana. Federally, it's not. So how did you rectify that for your Butler County properties?
Well, I mean, that is one of the biggest challenges that is facing the industry right now.
And that's not just Butler County.
No,
I mean, it's countywide.
It's nationwide. Yeah. You have a lot of states that not only have marijuana for medical reasons, but recreational use. And there was a to-do a little while back because the City Redevelopment Authority, which is separate from us,
yes,
had passed an ordinance or what have you regarding medical marijuana, mm-hmm. and a lot of people thought it applied to us. Mm-hmm. But the reality is with us, we are federally funded, and HUD's position on this, the last time I checked, and if it hasn't changed, and Lord knows it needs to change, or there needs to be some really firm guidance on this, mm-hmm. is that basically it's still considered a federal crime. It is still illegal federally, and because we are federally funded, it is not allowable in our properties. We will not allow it to be utilized in our properties. If we find it, it's the same as if you're abusing any other drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that somehow, I mean, personally, my personal feelings on that, it doesn't seem kind of fair if you are medically in need for pain management or what have you, mm-hmm. that you go to a healthcare provider, they provide you, and I know that doesn't seem right, but HUD's position is very specific when I inquired about it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually inquired it from some higher ups at HUD at the training, and their response was very simple. Well, is it legal? What's legal at the state? Was it legal federally? No. Who funds you? Federal government. It's illegal.
There's your answer.
There's the answer. Yeah. And a lot of times you can get reasonable accommodations if your health requires something.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of those instances where it's not eligible as a reasonable accommodation either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I expect this will all get challenged in the courts soon.
As time goes on.
Because there's going to have to be this reconciliation between, federal law and mm-hmm. state law. And right now, it appears to me, and this is just a personal opinion, that, the feds just don't really mess with it. It's just being left to its own
mm-hmm.
state devices,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and it is important for people to know that, like you said, it's not your thoughts on it or what people at your office believe. It has nothing to do with that. It's federally funded, and we're talking about a federal law.
Yeah, I revert back to the golden rule. The original golden rule is to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Unfortunately, as you get older, there's a new golden rule, and that's he who makes the gold, who has the gold makes the rule.
Makes the rule.
And so, we are subjected to that. I
mm-hmm.
mean, we recently, the beginning of this year, we had another major, promulgation from HUD. We had to eliminate smoking in our units, which was a pretty big to-do. Is HUD came out with the rule that you have to implement a no-smoking policy in not just common areas of the units, but in the units themselves. So your home, you're not allowed to smoke in that home.
Did that go over?
Honestly, a mixed bag. There's,
mm-hmm.
There's kind of three schools of thought. There are people who really were distraught about it because they're smokers and they, mm-hmm. They don't want to go outside in the middle of winter to have to smoke a cigarette, right? I mean, they don't want to lose their housing either.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who were glad because, oh, thank goodness, because now I don't have to breathe cigarette smoke, while I'm walking down the hall
mm-hmm.
of my home. And then there's the group in the middle that, could take it or leave it. They really didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to implement something like that.
And how hard is it to manage it?
Well, and that's the hardest part. I mean, because we have residents, frankly, that contact us and are upset that they don't believe we are enforcing the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of it is that we do enforce the policy, but we have to be able to win any kind of eviction action that we have. So what happens is if someone contacts us and says, hey, so-and-so is smoking, I mean, we'll reach out to remind the person, hey, anonymously, we hear that,
mm-hmm.
if we catch you smoking, well, then, we're going to have to move to evict you. And
mm-hmm.
that's a very hard thing to do. I mean, but again, HUD made that rule and we had to implement it in those properties where it was required, which was the public housing properties.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Ed Mock. He's the Executive Director of the Housing Authority for Butler County and the Redevelopment Authority. Again, long history for you in the housing industry. What's the biggest difference or maybe the biggest challenge you have found in Butler County from previous jobs?
Well, in particular in Butler County, the Butler County Housing Authority versus the Pittsburgh Housing Authority, or even the San Diego Housing Commission, both places where I was finance director, is the financial capacity of the organization. It is not funded as well as those other entities. Mm-hmm. And in taking over, that was one of the hardest things for me to adjust to. I mean, because in Pittsburgh, there's all kind of activity going all the time because there's a significant amount of resources available. Here, those resources aren't as fluid, mm-hmm. and so you have to be really cautious in how you spend money, in the amount and number of personnel that you have. And we were able to make a transition where we were losing money 3 years ago to where we're above water at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's basically just, we didn't have to lay anybody off, mm-hmm. But it was a matter of, just being very judicial. If someone does leave, do we replace? Do we reallocate duties? Things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But the funding challenge is always the tough one.
And is there any way for you, what are the resources or rather maybe entities that you go to ask for more funding? Like, who really is in charge of that?
Well, I mean, the biggest, the HUD money typically comes each year, and it's usually formula-driven. Mm-hmm. So from HUD, you're really not going after a whole lot of new money from them directly, because what happens is their funding is appropriated by Congress, and if Congress decides, to put more money into it, then you get more money. Mm-hmm. The ones that we compete with are more on the state level, where we compete for funds from PHFA, the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency, and DCED, the Department of Community and Economic Development. And they have more programs where we can, pitch various projects to get specific funding for those.
How do market housing prices affect what you do? Like, for people that either rent an apartment on their own or own their own home, we know that those fluctuate. Sometimes it's a buyer's market, sometimes it's a seller's market. I mean, we all know that. Does the market have anything to do with your operations?
Well, indirectly it does. I mean, if housing were cheaper, if there was a glut in the market and housing got cheaper, then obviously we wouldn't have as much of a demand in our business. Mm-hmm. But that's a very indirect correlation. For the most part, individuals who need affordable housing aren't competing in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it is kind of like its own subgroup, if you will, okay, of individuals. And it's based on need.
And you had touched upon the Section 8 rental assistance program. You said this is a major part of what you guys do.
It is a very big part. I mean, if you think about, we have 700 physical units approximately that we manage, but we have over 1,500 vouchers out there where we're just providing to the private market. And so when it comes to the private rental market, mm-hmm. we aid people so that people who do not have money and can't afford to pay the market rent can still rent in that market with a voucher absorbing part of that. But if you look at those two programs alone, that's over 2,200 families that we provide housing assistance to in one way or the other, which, Butler County is not that big of a county. So mm-hmm. it really, pretty much everyone in the county knows or either is using our services or knows or has family or has friends or someone, a child or something, who utilize our sources for mm-hmm. to help with their housing.
We're talking with Ed Mock, Executive Director of the Housing Authority for Butler County and the Redevelopment Authority as well. Our time running out here a little bit, Ed, but I do want to ask you this question. Is there a goal or an accomplishment that you would like to achieve since you've been in charge?
That you would like to achieve,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we really, there are a lot of things we would like to do. I mean, we've been spending a lot of time, getting things back in order, getting ourselves into the black, if you will, mm-hmm. Profitability-wise, so that we're not, bleeding out cash. But there are programs and there are things we like to do. I mean, for example, Rolling Road, I touched on earlier, is our most popular project. We have some land there. I'd love to put another addition to that building, put another 40 units down there. You know, just there are things like that. It's more affordable housing development. And that's an area that I think, you know, we're primed for. It's just a matter of having the resources to do it. One of the other areas that I've tried to do, because the bulk of our housing is senior-based. So it's 80-85% of our housing is senior-based and not a lot family-based. Usually a lot of our family base is covered under the Section 8 program. So I would like to see us, you know, create some, you know, individual units of housing. And we have an acquisition rehab program that we try to use for that purpose. So you know, we look for homes that are blighted. Mm-hmm. Or even potentially in foreclosure, and we look to acquire those properties. So instead of them going all the way blighted and then having to be torn down, we try to get them before the bones aren't solid, if you will, mm-hmm. and then do the renovations to it, basically bring it up within the community setting that it's in, but then utilize that to rent to people who don't necessarily maybe even fit into some of these other programs, and to be more of a using that as a tool to help where needed. And we've only done a couple so far, mm-hmm. but it's been very successful. And as funding, if we can continue to obtain funding from the state and the county level, we look to do more of that activity.
Now, I'm sure municipalities like that as well, because not only are you helping somebody in need of a home, but it's making their area look better too.
You're eliminating blight.
Exactly.
And so what happens is these aren't the most efficient ways of providing a unit, because you are cleaning up a blighted situation.
Rebuilding.
But the overall value to the community is significantly mm-hmm. beneficial.
Mm-hmm. One more Stand Down event. This is coming up here in November. Could you touch upon that briefly?
Yeah, the Stand Down event is a annual event that we are partners with other entities in the county. Basically going to try to provide help for homeless. We have it at a center, and we bring in resources all together at one location so that we're able to, you know, to provide a one-stop shop, mm-hmm. to try to bring people in and get folks the assistance they need to try to help them out. This year's Stand Down event is November 2nd. It's at the Tanglewood Senior Center. And it's been very successful. I mean, we've had, just as an example, we have a lot of you know, we have a lot of partners that come in. We have some funding that we specifically obtained, you know, veteran-related funding that we are able to help put in. But the local community, you know, Walmart, for example, donates a bunch of stuff. And I can't list all the folks who contribute. But it's a very community-based program, because, you know, the community comes together to help out. And you can't ask for more than that. And if anybody wants to contribute or help towards that, I would just say to contact our office. I mean, one of my staff members, Dana Lefevre, she is instrumental in that. Mm-hmm. And you know, she could be reached at that same number, 724-287-6797. If anybody out there wants to contribute or get involved with putting on what is an exceptional program and a very successful program that we're a part of. I don't say it's ours. It's not ours. It's a partnership with the VA and other entities. But it is a great event that happens, and we've been trying to keep that going every year.
Well, I think it's been a very successful radio debut, Ed.
Oh, I didn't pass out, so that's a winner.
He's Ed Mock, Executive Director of the Housing Authority for Butler County and the Redevelopment Authority as well. Thanks for making the time to come in.
Oh, thank you for having us on. I really appreciate it, and I really, really am glad to have had the opportunity to talk about the organizations and what we do.
And as he said, more at housingauthority.com, and that phone number is 724-287-6797. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. Tyler Friel, Kayla Molzan, in for the vacationing Dave Malarkey. We'll be back after this.
Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center is hosting a free senior healthcare seminar on Thursday, September 20th at 10 a.m. A healthcare advisor will discuss important topics like the basics of Medicare, including how and when to enroll, finding the right plan, and prescription drug coverage. Plus, you'll have a chance to speak with an expert to discuss any questions you may have. Don't miss this free senior healthcare seminar, September 20th, 10 a.m. at Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Thorn Apple Drive, Butler.
Get ready for fall at Osterling's Lawn and Garden. Pick up fertilizer for your blueberries, raspberries, lawn, shrubs, and trees, or grass seed to seed and reseed your lawn. Stock up on flea and tick products like BioSpot Drops, Spectra Shore Drops, Zodiac Flea Collars, Salvo Flea Collars, Enforcer Shampoo and Spray, and more. All fall and Halloween decorations are at 25% off, and bulk flower bulbs are coming soon, like crocuses, tulips, snowdrops, and more. And don't forget bulb planters and espalma organic bulb fertilizer too. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden in Butler.
If you have any extra produce from your backyard garden, here's a thought. Why not donate that excess produce to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank here in Butler? Now, they don't want all of your garden stuff, of course not. But if you have any left over, or if you'd like to dedicate a little bit to the needy and the less fortunate, that would be great. They make it very easy. They have a collection every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. until noon. You can just take your excess garden produce to the St. Michael Parish Hall on the south side. It's right behind St. Michael the Archangel Church on Center Avenue. And they're there every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. until noon. Drop off your excess garden produce. It'll be in the food bank and ready for distribution the following Monday. At the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler, they like to say, we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. And a very easy way to do that. So think about it. Donating your excess garden produce to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul.
Great products at greatly reduced prices is exactly what you'll find at Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet. You'll find many of your favorite name brand grocery items, as well as fresh produce, frozen and refrigerated foods, and much more. All items 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Sharp Shopper has been bringing bargains to Pennsylvania communities for 30 years. Be sure to visit their new Butler store location in Point Plaza. Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet, a new way to shop, a new way to save.
Welcome back to the It's Your Turn program, listeners. Tyler Friel, Kayla Molze, and in for Dave Malarkey on this Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Coming up later on in the program, we'll talk with Brian Perry. He'll be in the studio. He is the executive director of the Allegheny Trail Alliance, and this is very intriguing as I was doing my research for this. We'll be talking about the Great Allegheny Passage. It is a 150-mile trail that goes from Pittsburgh to Cumberland, Maryland. So we'll kind of get into the details of how that came about and what's all available for that. He'll be joining us in the studio. Our next guest, though, Kayla, will join us by the phone.
Yeah, her name is A.R. Padmi. She's an author from upstate New York, has a book out. And basically, she talks about something that I think all of us at one time can relate to, being in a bad mood. Basically, yes. What I was in yesterday.
Yes.
And I knew you were going to say it, so I figured I might as well just come out and say it first. But, no, she talks about just with the political climate and, you know, just other things that are happening in our world. Sometimes it's easy to get brought down, mm-hmm. You know, depending on – it doesn't even matter where you stand or what you feel about issues. It's constant, yeah. And it can bring you down. And I got to speak with her about how to climb out of that when you get down in the dump. So This is A.R. Padmi. She's an author from upstate New York. Welcome back, listeners, to It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM in Butler, Pennsylvania. Kayla Molzan with you today, and I'm excited to talk to our next guest because she says she can tell us how to overcome something that I think a lot of us go through, maybe on a day-to-day basis, a bad mood. You might be shaking your head listening to us now saying, yeah, I'm in one right now. How do I get out of it? I want to welcome on the phone, A.R. Padmi is joining me. A.R., thanks so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on your show, Kayla.
Where are you? I told our listeners you're calling in. Where are you based in the country?
I'm based in New York. Okay. Yeah, based in the Northeast. I do travel a lot, though.
Awesome, awesome. I'm
not always there.
Well, you're on our same time zone, then.
Yes, yes.
AR, as I said at the top of the show, you're going to teach us how to overcome a bad mood. I know your basic premise is, you know, people wake up, you're starting your day, you're feeling great. You can tackle all this. You have a positive mood, a positive atmosphere going on, and then maybe it hits you. You turn on the TV, you hear something negative. You know, somebody says maybe an unflattering comment to you, and now you're in a bad mood and you can't get out of it. What's the most basic thing you can tell our listeners to do to avoid this?
Well, that's a great question. And so I think the most important thing to think about is, you know, we're completely in control. If we're in a bad mood, it is completely up to us to just change our channel and get out of it. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is to know that we have that capacity at any given moment. You know, yes, we can fall into a bad mood, but we can also turn right around and get ourselves out of it. And I think I like to use music a lot as an analogy, you know, given that this is a radio station, you know, there's a lot of music, mm-hmm. you know, on radios. And so it can be as easy as just switching the channel sometimes. If you're listening to, you know, some kind of bad news, and then finally you switch, and then you suddenly switch to your favorite song, then, you know, you can change your energy and your mood just like that. Music is energy, so it has a certain vibration. So we also have energy vibrations. You know, we all vibrate at a certain level, and that's something we can go into, and we'd like to talk more about that today. And so in order to change that vibration, you know, from something that's negative to positive, all we have to do is just focus on something that's more positive, let's say like your favorite song or pick-me-up, whatever it is that would turn your mood. Animal videos. I know a lot of people online these days love animal videos, and that's actually one of my favorites these days. I just love watching those Instagram little animals.
The cat and, videos, you know, that everybody loves.
Yes, the cat videos, exactly, and all the puppies. And, yeah, so I read a lot of news, actually, on social media. So it's a really great kind of change, a way to change the channel. When you just shift to something else.
So I hear you saying that sometimes, you know, we're not always in control of what we see, you know, whether we're on social media, we're scrolling, and then we come across something that, you know, makes us unhappy. But we are in control of saying, okay, well, I'm going to get out of this unhappiness by, like you said, changing the channel, bringing something else in front of your face that's going to make you happier.
Yes, exactly. So that's just, to me, I like to say it's a matter of awareness. As long as we're aware, yes, I'm in a really bad mood right now, and you know, and I feel like I'm going to stay in this forever. But then if you just say, you know what, I can change this. I can put on my favorite song. I can look at some cute videos, you know, of little animals. It's really that easy sometimes. And, you know, obviously there are some situations where we have, you know, like a major stressor in our life. You know, it might take a little bit more than that. But we can really, you know, it's about finding your peace, finding your center. Once you can find your peace and your center, you can pretty much find it from wherever point you might be in the day, you know, let's say. And whatever mood you are.
Speaking of finding your peace and your center, I know that looks differently for different people. What might be peaceful to me might not be peaceful to my coworker, Tyler. You talk about vibrations, too, and how those are different for each person. How do you find out, like, what your good vibration is or what makes you happy? If maybe you're sitting there thinking, I don't know what makes me happy.
Well, I think, I think we all kind of have a happiness barometer, right? So we know when we're feeling good, or we know when we're feeling peaceful, we know what brings more peace into our lives, and we also have different triggers that would kind of bring more stress into our lives or take us away from that peaceful center. And, you know, it's a little bit different for everybody. You know, for example, like relationships. You know, there are some types of relationships that work great for some people, and then there are some relationships that might, you know, the exact same type of relationship might work horribly for somebody else with mm-hmm. a different personality. So, you know, it's all very individualized that way, I think. I think it was just what brings you to that happy center where you feel peaceful, where you feel, you know, full of joy. Joy is one thing that I think we can all use more of. It's really one of the highest energy vibrations. And, you know, little kids tend to express more joy. I think as adults, you know, we get kind of bogged down in responsibilities and everyday obligations. But it's really important to remember, you know, joy is that highest vibration. And if, you know, whether it's little animals that bring it out of us or, you know, seeing, I think a while back there was a raccoon that was scaling the skyscraper, you know, whatever it is that brings us back into that, you know, center of joy.
I think our culture is kind of, you know, taught us that or told us that only young children should be that joyful, if that makes sense. And then, you know, you grow up and you become adults and it's like, okay, well, you have to go through your day. You got to go to work, you know, got to do all those obligations that you have. So you don't have time for joy. But I hear you saying we should try to be just as joyful as our children.
Yes, or no, obviously, you know, we have our daily obligations and responsibilities. And perhaps, you know, we can't be that joyful 24/7 like children are, but we can kind of preserve a sense of our inner child. And I think that's something, it's a very conscious choice to maintain that sense of innocence, you know, no matter what we see in the world, you know, to be able to have faith in the beautiful things in life and to be able to, you know, feel that joy and that magic and the miracle of just the simplest things that children might derive a lot of joy from, you know, just to have that, I think, or to have a sense of it. You know, we don't have to be like that 24/7, but just to be able to get into that joyful space, I think, or to stay in touch with it, I think really kind of keeps us, you know, in touch with what I like to call the magical world, which my book For Love of Eden does. It's really a very magical and beautiful story, and my goal was to really kind of help people kind of tune into that, you know. Yes, you know, we're not always in that space, and I certainly wasn't writing the book, but you know, but it's a very special kind of place to know. It's, for me, another metaphor I like to use is kind of pulling down a bit of heaven to earth. And you know, obviously there are a lot of imperfections about this world, a lot of, you know, challenges and dark things. But, you know, if we can do what we can to just create a beautiful heavenly world around us, you know, then we can pull a little bit of that heaven down to earth and create our own paradise.
You are an author, as you said, and you did write a book called For Love of Eden. And I do want to talk about that in just a few minutes. But I wanted to get back to a couple things when you're talking about living your life at a high frequency. And you say that that looks different for different people. What benefits can you experience when you are living your life at a high frequency? What can you see change in your life?
Well, I think definitely, you know, as you wake up feeling hopeful and happy every day, you know, having something to look forward to, knowing that life isn't just an everyday drudgery, you know, really getting in tune with, again, I like to use the word magic. And that can mean a whole bunch of things to a whole lot of people. But I mean it in the most kind of heavenly way where, you know, we do see miracles around us in kind of everyday things that maybe somebody who's not as in tune to those higher frequencies wouldn't notice and wouldn't perhaps be as grateful.
When you're vibing high and you're feeling good, it really can impact a lot of areas of your life. I'm assuming your work, you know, your school, even to your family and friends, that they kind of feed off your energy. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think it can be quite contagious, especially, you know, again, parents of young children. They will find this a lot. You know, they will find themselves more in a place of joy, and they will be able to see all the beautiful miracles of life that children often see that we as adults just simply don't notice because, you know, we're too busy going on with our responsibilities. I think it helps your life to flow more. You'll literally feel like, oh, everything's just kind of flowing. I'm just going with the flow, and everything's going great. I think it really helps kind of bring the blessings into our life. And I think definitely, yeah, your family, your friends, your whole community would notice that, you know, because if that peace emanates from you, then that effectively also helps to define the world around you. So the more we can stay in that center of peace, I think the more we would be able to see it reflected in the world around us.
Do you find that it's harder to access our center of peace lately? It seems that, you know, politically we're fighting more than ever, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. You turn on the news and, you know, it seems very negative. Do you see that it's harder for people to kind of find that peace than it has been in years past?
Yes, I would definitely say though. So it's definitely been a more kind of toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And again, yes, whichever side of the aisle you're on. And I think that makes it very difficult as people are kind of focused on tearing each other down and being negative, and especially on social media these days,
mm-hmm.
You know, people are very kind of, yeah, no qualms about, you know, the simple courtesies in life don't seem to apply on social media.
Right.
They do in person. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, there are definitely a lot more factors that would kind of pull us down. And it's important to be aware of those. And sometimes, you know, it's the people around us. You know, I think you probably heard of the phrase toxic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to think about, you know, whether we have to cut some people out or not. Of course, that's harder to do when it's family, you know, or core people in your life, you know, that you can't just kind of cut out. But, you know, there are things to think about, you know, choosing the right friends, the right relationships, and really just creating the life that you want to create. And I think that's really what the core of this is about, is just making the conscious choices to, you know, really kind of be aware that you're in the driver's seat and you can actually create, you know, the type of energies, the type of environment around you. You can make those changes to create the life you want.
I think that's interesting. We as adults sometimes, I think, feel like, well, that friend, you know, she does or he does bring me down a bit, but, you know, I have to be friends with them. In a lot of cases, you don't have to be. I know family sometimes is a different animal because, you know, you can't choose your family. But if a friend is toxic, I mean, you as an adult could make the choice to maybe, you know, step back or step away.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there are people, you know, we have very close friends and we know how it feels to be around them. You know, they're very supportive. You know, whatever we're wanting to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'll help us. And we feel that positive energy coming to our life, just feeding us really spiritually. And then there are others who are just kind of like the vampires, and they just drain the energy and take away. And, you know, yes, and they don't always mean to do it, but, you know, people cannot help, you know, what they do sometimes. And maybe they're just in a more negative space. And sometimes, you know, it helps to kind of be a support to that person. But then we also have to kind of draw our boundaries and just know, you know, we also deserve a very wholesome life and a positive, supportive life. And, you know, perhaps it's a good thing to keep some of those more energy-draining friends at a distance.
I want to get your take on, because I think some of our listeners might be saying, well, what about in a work environment? Obviously, in many cases, you can't pick who you work with. If you have to go into the office every day and maybe you have a coworker that you actually do like, but they just might be a more negative person, and you have to spend a lot of time with them, you might feel like they're draining you. Is it ever okay to say something to that person and say, you know, maybe we don't talk so negatively sometimes, or, you know, let's keep it light? Or do you think you should just focus on your response and, as you said, you know, channeling your happiness?
Well, yeah, definitely in the work environment, sometimes, you know, it's not up to us. And I think, you know, if somebody really is that disruptive, you know, I think switching projects,
mm-hmm.
perhaps. You know, of course, it depends on the situation. It, you really have to kind of weigh out the benefits, the pros and cons. And I've definitely been in work situations where there are people who are just literally competitive,
mm-hmm.
and they're just, you know, and that happens in a lot of work environments. And that's kind of hard to avoid. But again, I think it's about keeping distance as much as you can. And in work, there's a lot of politics involved. So trying to get on the same teams with people you feel good working with, I think would really help people kind of in the long run too with your work projects, you know. And so probably would be a good career move to be aware of who you do work well with and those that you don't, and kind of strategizing around that.
Let's talk about your book. As we mentioned earlier in the show, it is called For Love of Eden. And I know that you have been around the country. You've worked in the White House. You've worked for the United Nations. How did you, first of all, did you always want to be an author? And how did you come to this topic to write about? Tell me about the book a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'd love to. Yeah, you know, I've definitely done, you know, different things. You know, I've been in policy and politics and in international relations. And I feel like, you know, like, some people say these days, you know, our work isn't necessarily as linear anymore. And there are a lot of people out there, you know, who do actually have different careers and different projects, different talents. And so I think people are starting more and more to perhaps that there is a possibility to have non-linear careers. Mm-hmm. And I think just, you know, the nature of kind of the industries I've been have kind of lent itself to that. I just always felt like I was going to be writing, I think, at some point. So it was definitely something I was thinking about as early as, you know, back in my college days. And, you know, there's just something that, you know, it draws you to it. And It's not easy, I'd say. You know, if I just sat down today and said, okay, I'm going to write a book, you know, chances are I'd be putting it in that recycle bin, mm-hmm. you know, pretty quickly. Because the inspiration has to come from somewhere. So For Love of Eden is a fiction, it's a story. And I was lucky enough, you know, I think one day I was sitting, it was a rainy day, and the book starts out with a scene of this magical rainy scene in a dream. And suddenly, like, all these, and I was listening to some music. Music are wonderful channels of inspiration. And then suddenly all these images just started coming to me of the story. I was like, wow, you know, this is so, you know, far out there. Mm-hmm. But I had to write it down. And so that's how the book came into being. It actually started as a screenplay. I could see the whole story kind of like a movie in my mind. So I first wrote it down as a screenplay, and it had all the music that inspired the story in it. And that's still a work in progress, actually, because I'm still trying to figure out that industry. But, so I decided, you know, in the meantime, to put it down as a book. So.
And this was your first book?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the writing process. I think so many people are intimidated. You know, you pick up a book, and I don't know how many pages long yours is, but a lot of times people are like, wow, I couldn't imagine writing that many words down. I'm sure you break it down into sections and kind of tackle it that way.
Yeah, and my book is on the shorter end. It's 30,000 characters, or actually 30,000 words, excuse me. And so it's on the shorter end, kind of Old Man and the Sea. It's not the longest book in the world, even though, and I kind of wondered about that. Well, like, should I make it longer? Mm-hmm. But I think the story just, if you kind of find some inspiration, the story writes itself. And it's very hard to try to tamper with that, if you will, in any way. So I think, you know, that was just as much as was needed to tell the story. And so that was that. So, yeah, I did feel some pressure about, well, most fiction novels are supposed to be 80,000 words, something like that. But, you know, for me, it was very important to kind of do it the way it was meant to be and as it came to me, you know, as an inspiration. So I think, I'm pretty happy with how it turned out.
After people finish your book, For Love of Eden, how will they feel? I know it delivers a message of peace and self-discovery in it.
Yes. Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing kind of more feedback on it, actually. And I'm really hoping that, you know, to me, like we've been talking all this time about energies, I think stories And even just teachers, I've had teachers, speakers, and even leaders of countries like presidents, they can pass on live channels of energy that you can take with you for the rest of your lives that kind of inform, like something that you did. Like, for example, one of my expertise areas is mm-hmm. actually in the Middle East, and that wasn't one of the things I studied per se in my PhD program, but I had a teacher who was an intro to international relations teacher, but he just made the Middle East come alive every time he talked about it. It was so vivid. It was like he was passing on ancient wisdoms and just centuries of information just through his lectures every single day to us. And I think, I'm on Twitter for other things other than my book, but so that's one of the things I talk about a lot, is understanding the Middle East and what's going on there right now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So my book, From the Love of Eden, has different channels, not political ones. Mm-hmm. But, I'm really hoping live channels into kind of the more heavenly, magical realms so that people can connect, with that inner peace and that inner bliss and just, the universal message of why we're here, which is the unconditional love that surrounds this entire world that, of course, we don't see every day because we're not feeling unconditional love every single day. But that's really what this world is completely bathed in, when we kind of peel away all the darkness that comes in, all these battles going back and forth.
I do think it's so interesting, too. I mean, you talk about the universal message that depending on where you live and what part of the world, you deal with different issues and, things affect you differently. But when you boil it all down, we're all humans and we're all just trying to be happy. Isn't that right?
Yes, exactly. And I think, one of the great purposes of why we're here is to really express that love, that unconditional love toward each other. And of course, during these very politicized times, it's very difficult to talk about these topics. And people are like, wait, mm-hmm. are you on a different planet? That's just, that's not kind of the relevant issues of the day, if you will. But I mean, if you look at the bigger picture, the constant through all of the riffraff and all of the things going on in the world, the constant is that unconditional love that is really out there in the universe. And, some people will say, if you're Christian, people will talk about God. And I use God because I do have a Christian path as well. Mm-hmm. But, it can come in different names. They're agnostic. You can simply refer to it as the unconditional love of the universe. Or in Buddhism, they talk about Buddha. But the thing is, there is this higher power out there, and it's constant, and it's all love, and that's ultimately why we're here, to express that to each other. And of course, we forget that often.
We do forget that, and I think it's such a good message for people just to remind themselves, as we all go through the drudges of everyday life and all the negativity, just to remember why we are here, I guess.
Yes. So that was really the message, I think, in the book. And I think that's really why I was kind of inspired to write it. Of course, I wrote it about 5 years ago. The story came together about 5 years ago. So it's a different time now, but,
the messages are still the same, in a sense.
Yes, yes. The message is still universal. And, even if it seems like just the last thing we might think about in our busy days, I'm hoping to just remind people, there is a reason why we're here, and it is much greater than all of these kind of altercations going back and forth, and it is much more beautiful, and it is much more hopeful. So,
is your book available wherever books can be purchased?
Yeah, well, it's available online right now. Okay. On Amazon, and I've been very happy to find that it's actually very well distributed online, so you can find it in all parts of the world really right now. It's amazing how it works these days.
It is.
Amazon. Yeah, it really is. Barnes & Noble. And even the independent bookstores online.
Awesome. for remind listeners, it's called For Love of Eden, written by A.R. Padmi. A.R., thanks so much for joining us and for the great conversation. It has me feeling a little happier as I continue my day.
Great. Well, thanks so much. It was a real pleasure talking with you, Kayla. I really enjoyed the interview.
Thank you so
much. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
It just keeps getting better and better at your hometown center for entertainment, Tanglewood. On Saturday, September 15th, enjoy the sights and sounds of the fabulous Gemtones. This Las Vegas-style show and dance band features a variety of music from R&B, soul, oldies, disco, and uptown funk. Doors open at 6 o'clock, BYOB dinner by Chef George at 7, show begins at 8. All this good stuff for only $25. Call 287-0021 for reservations.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
Driving up to us, we're going your way. Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. Pittsburgh destinations include downtown and the North Shore. Whether you're looking for a less expensive commute to work or wanting to visit the attractions of the Pittsburgh area, let the bus take you there. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us, we're going your way.
Welcome back to the It's Your Turn program, listeners. Tyler Friel and Kayla Moles and in for Dave Malarkey on this Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. And we are joined now by the executive director of the Allegheny Trail Alliance. His name is Brian Perry. He joins us inside the studio. Brian, first of all, thanks for making the trip up here. Thanks for taking the time. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
So the Allegheny Trail Alliance, let's just start there. What exactly is it?
Sure. We are an alliance of trail builders, trail owners, and volunteer groups who have, over the last 30 years, built the Great Allegheny Passage, which is a 150-mile rail trail that links Cumberland, Maryland, to Point State Park in Pittsburgh. And our groups maintain and steward this trail and promote both day riding and through riding for folks who want a lovely long-distance journey through some of the most scenic spots in the region.
And that's what, looking at the map here, and Kayla, I'll toss it over to you so you can kind of get an idea. I mean, 150 miles, obviously, that's quite a trek. And you had mentioned just the scenic views. And I think anybody, at least who's made the trip down the turnpike, can get an idea of, okay, this is what it looks like. Or cutting through 79 or 19, and you get into the rolling hills, especially in the Laurel Highlands, and that's just a very brief portion of this trail.
The Laurel Highlands is amazing, and you're riding or hiking through mountains and farms and meadows. The trail follows river paths, so for a portion you're on the Monongahela River, mm-hmm. but for longer stretches on the Youghiogheny and the Castleman. So you can bring your fishing pole and stop and pick up dinner along mm-hmm. the way and then bike back to where you started. There's just some great views, right? Mm-hmm. Four tunnels, 12 major bridges, each with some great vistas of the fall colors or spring wildflowers. It's a beautiful place to ride.
And you said this is quite popular. About how many people make the trek on the Great Allegheny Passage each year?
We saw about 1 million visits to the Great Allegheny Passage in 2016 and another 1 million visits in 2017. Many of those folks are just out for a day ride with friends mm-hmm. or family. Mm-hmm. But some folks will choose to do an overnight, like you park in one trail town, bike to the next, stay overnight, mm-hmm. and then bike back the next day. And then several thousand people will choose to do the whole trail at once. And they'll pack their gear on their bikes. Some will camp. Some will stay in an inn or a guest house. And some folks will even complete the Great Allegheny Passage and then pick up the C&O Canal towpath in Cumberland and go all the way to Washington, D.C.
Those are the diehards.
Yeah, that's the adventure.
At 150 miles, how long have you gone on the trail?
I've done the whole trail end to end a couple times.
So he's a diehard.
Yep. And the trail is largely level. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of an incline if you're climbing out of Cumberland, Maryland, up into Pennsylvania. But you get to pass the Mason-Dixon line. You get to go through the Big Savage Tunnel. There's a great rest spot at the Eastern Continental Divide with a marker there to take a picture. And then it's a nice sort of easy quarter percent downhill mm-hmm. all the way to Pittsburgh for the next 2 days. So you can do it on almost any bike, and it's just a lovely spot.
So the grade seems to be fairly nice in terms of, you know, what you're either riding on or walking on, and from what I was reading, even maybe riding a horse on?
There are some sections where you can wow. ride horseback, yes. Not every section is wide enough for that, but some of the sections through the Laurel Highlands all the way to the Maryland border, our website would have additional information for folks who ride. But you mentioned the trail surface is mostly crushed limestone. Portions of it are paved the closer you get to Pittsburgh. Rollerbladers like to check out that section. But because the Great Allegheny Passage is built on old rail lines, you're at railroad grade the whole time. Mm-hmm. So the curves are steady. Any of the hills are flattened out with tunnels mm-hmm. and bridges, so it's not an up
wonderful
and down
news.
ride. Yeah.
How long did it take you to complete, and what was the weather like? What time of year did you do it?
Oh, I've done it in the spring and summer, and it can be hot in the summer, but the good thing about riding a bike at 10 miles an hour is the sweat evaporates mm-hmm. pretty easily. There are a lot of places where you can get down to the river and soak your feet or splash some water on your face. Mm-hmm. The fall upcoming is going to be glorious, yep. and there are some great vantage points for seeing fall colors. You can bike up to the Big Savage Tunnel Overlook and see into four states. You can, near Connellsville, you can be at some very pristine, beautiful spots following the path where George Washington and General Edward Braddock mm-hmm. Marched their troops from Cumberland toward Fort Duquesne. And those are just two lovely spots along the way.
So when you made the journey, did you do the camping out? Did you stay at some of these trail towns? Or what was the game plan there?
So I was traveling with folks for whom a long-distance bike ride was a new thing, and they preferred to take advantage of the guest houses and B&Bs. So mm-hmm. We chose to take advantage of those little businesses that dot the trail town. So we had a mattress and a shower and a great meal at night and a great meal in the morning. That's probably my preference. But if you'd like to camp, there are campgrounds, many of them free along the way, mm-hmm. some of them in paid spots along the trail, but you can put together a really lovely trip either way.
I'm intrigued by the trail towns. I'm really intrigued by the whole trip itself. I mean, if you are able to do the 150-mile trip. But you said these trail towns are just so unique and have really embraced the idea of becoming a trail town.
Yes, the business owners in these towns have seen the opportunity to cater to long-distance bike tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And so in eight little towns, we've seen the growth of cafes, bike shops, shuttle services, ice creameries, craft beer breweries, distilleries, outfitters. You can hire a shuttle service if you wish, not to carry all of your luggage for 50 miles a day, right? And you drop your luggage in the morning with this service. The service will meet you at the next campground or in the next town at the end of your day. You can hire a trip planner, right? If you'd like to find someone who knows the trail inside and out, that person can plan your entire trip for you, if you like, for a fee. Or you could pick up a copy of our trail guide, which is on our website at gaptrail.org, which includes weatherproof maps, maps of each of these trail towns, and you can curate your own trip from town to town to town, depending on how long you'd like to ride each day.
I'm sure some of these trail towns have been completely transformed. I mean, going from not having many visitors to, I mean, you said a million in 2016, a million in 2017. I know all those people probably wouldn't stop at every single town. But still, I mean, that's so many people that they had never had in their area before.
A lovely spot in the Laurel Highlands is a very small town called Confluence. And it joins the Castleman River, the Youghiogheny River, and Laurel Hill Creek. And you cross into town on a really quaint bike and pedestrian bridge, and you almost feel like you're on an island in between these rivers. And there are dozens of bed and breakfasts and guest houses. The streets are lined with trees, and there's just a beautiful town square with eateries and a bike shop. The fall colors are amazing. And you feel like you've wandered into just a little piece of heaven, almost a little resort in some ways. Other places like Myersdale, Pennsylvania, that's the maple syrup capital of Pennsylvania, right?
They
run a maple festival in the spring with a parade, and riding out there is well worth all the pancakes you can eat in the morning.
That seems like a breakfast destination right there. And we're talking with Brian Perry. He's the executive director of the Allegheny Trail Alliance. About how old is the Allegheny Trail Alliance, and how did it come together?
We were formed in 1995 in order to together tackle some of the more difficult trail building along the entire corridor. Many of our volunteer groups in the early 90s and late 80s had been building little bits of trail in and around the towns that exist on the corridor, but there were some barriers to completing a long-distance trail, some major bridges, some significant tunnels, major sections of rural Pennsylvania not near towns where someone needed to take initiative and raise money to get the trail built. So we thought building together was a stronger way forward than each of these groups trying to advance a few number of miles at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So over the last 23 years, we've been able to raise money together and raise up volunteers together to tackle some of these longer stretches. The last bit of trail was completed in 2013. And the first bit of trail was laid down in around 1980. So it's been a long time in coming.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hopeful that as the notoriety of the Great Allegheny Passage advances, that we'll be able to keep drawing more and more people to the region.
Well, funding-wise, you had mentioned resources. How does that come about for you guys?
So during our trail building phase, we were able to raise a good deal of private dollars through private and corporate donations.
Mm-hmm.
as well as some public funds through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and through some federal grants that are directed toward recreational improvements and trails. Our trail building days are past us now, and we continue to look to raise individual dollars from households and families and corporations to add amenities to the trail, like bike fix-it stations or benches along the way. Trail maintenance continues to be a significant need, and the news this week of the flooding because of rain that we got in the western Pennsylvania region, that resulted in some significant flooding along several miles of trail. Our volunteer groups have people to put to those tasks of digging out and laying down new limestone, but they each rely on donations to buy materials to keep the trail in great shape.
Do you find that a lot of the volunteers you have are very passionate about this? Because when I think of outdoorsy-esque people, that they are very passionate about nature itself, but then maintaining and giving others an opportunity to experience what they've experienced.
The volunteer groups are amazing in every way. Some folks are retired, but other folks are working full-time jobs and spend a couple evenings a week or the better part of a Saturday out on the trail. They're cutting down knotweed, they're cutting grass, they're filling potholes, they're dealing with sections of trail that may have been inundated with standing water after a storm. There were 42 trees down near Confluence and Ohio Pile last week with the storms, and within a few hours they were cut up and set aside so cyclists can get through. Some of our volunteers are former railroad employees, right, who may have worked on the Pittsburgh and Lake Erie line or on the Western Maryland Railway line, and they have a love for the corridor, and they're very interested in seeing people use it now for health and well-being, even though the trains aren't running.
What's it like to manage 150 miles of trail? I mean, we're talking multiple states and a lot of mileage. What's it like, and how do you keep tabs on what's going on?
You probably wish you could have a staff of 100 paid to do it.
My own work is more on coordination and communication to those on the ground in our towns and across the entire corridor. There are some sections, like in Ohio Pile State Park, where park staff kindly maintains the trail. And in Somerset County in the Laurel Highlands, the county handles maintenance along that section. So in some sections, my job is to find out where the key maintenance issues are and just to make sure that resources are being applied the right amounts and at the right timing. The section of the Great Allegheny Passage, though, from Connellsville all the way to Pittsburgh is volunteer maintained. And there our groups are very interested in seeing their number of volunteers stay steady or increase over time. And those groups work really hard to build up their own capacity through 5Ks and rides and runs and local promotion to let people know about the opportunities there are to serve. We do a lot of getting together for trail summits, and we do a lot of communicating throughout the week to make sure the trail is clear and open.
Do you know where most of your visitors are coming from? I would imagine it is Pennsylvania residents, but I think we take our state for granted and just how beautiful it is. And if you ever have, you know, I had family in a couple months back from the West Coast, and, you know, they're saying it really is beautiful here. You don't think Pennsylvania and, you know, a gorgeous landscape, but that is the case. Do you think people are starting to travel from other states to the passage?
The Great Allegheny Passage had visitors from all 50 states last year and for as far back as we have records, and over 40 countries as well. Sure, Pennsylvania residents love the Gap, and that's probably our largest crowd is from Pennsylvania and Maryland. But we draw heavily from Ohio and Virginia and New York and West Virginia as well. So it's exciting to see locals use it for out-and-back trips or for local exercise. It's also fascinating to talk to people who've flown to Pittsburgh from Texas or Seattle or from France or from Winnipeg just to enjoy this lovely trail.
So. And you said it drops, it finishes at this Point State Park in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a non-vehicle, non-motorized trail. So how does that actually happen?
Like, how do you get into the
how
city?
How do you get into the city?
The heart of the city.
Sure. So our local partner in Pittsburgh is Friends of the Riverfront, and they are the ones who've developed the sections of the Great Allegheny Passage in Pittsburgh. You cross the Hot Metal Bridge from the south side over to Oakland, and then follow the existing trail, originally called the Eliza Furnace Trail, that heads you down the Monongahela River.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, right now, there are about three blocks where you'll either ride on the sidewalk or walk your bike on the sidewalk or ride on the road until you reach Point State Park. And once you're in Point State Park, you've got the run of the place, right? So folks will cycle, typically, the Great Allegheny Passage, but it's great for runners or for hikers. You can cross-country ski at the high elevations, typically in Somerset County or in Maryland in the wintertime. And like you mentioned earlier, folks can ride on horseback. We've got one event coming up that may interest you if you're a runner. It's called the Great Allegheny Passage Relay. It'll be October 12 and 13, and it's a team running event, 150 miles, overnight, through the dark, from Cumberland to Pittsburgh. And so, Tyler, you and Kayla would get six of your teammates. And,
only six?
And you would each have, you'd run a few miles and you'd hand a baton to the next person, and that person would retire, and then the next person would run their leg and hand it off to fresh legs.
Your idea of a few miles is different than my idea of a few miles.
It should be a lovely event. So the trail's worth running or hiking as well as bicycling.
Have you done that event before? Do you get a good response for it?
This will be our first time.
Okay.
Our friends who run the Pittsburgh Marathon are organizing it, and we've got well over 40 teams and several hundred people lined up. It should be an amazing event.
We're talking with Brian Perry. He's the executive director of the Allegheny Trail Alliance. One thing that has always enamored me about the idea of being outdoors in a day and age when, I mean, heck, me sitting here in front of me, I got my phone, I got a computer, I've got all this technology in front of me. This seems like a great opportunity to kind of disconnect from the world and just get out and experience nature.
There are a lot of great places to explore, and this usually isn't counted as a trail feature, but there are some sections where you don't get good cell service. So you can really be isolated if you wish on some of the more rural sections. Along the way, you could park your bike. You could hike in Cedar Creek County Park. That's a Westmoreland County Park, through a gorge trail. You could hike at Dead Man's Hollow, which is maintained by the Allegheny Land Trust near McKeesport. You could take a floating trip along the Middle Yauk, or you could rent kayaks near Rockwood, for example, and do some fishing or some floating. It really is a serene and lovely place. The trail runs through the deepest gorge in Pennsylvania, through Ohio Pyle State Park, and it can be dark in that gorge in the middle of the day because you're well within the canopy of trees. You won't get lost, but figuratively, you can certainly get away from it all.
I know they always say, Tyler, and my guest right before you was talking about how to get out of a bad mood, and a lot of people say nature is cheaper than therapy, that it really is a therapy for a lot of folks.
I know on a much smaller scale, I mean, there's woods where I live, and you know, you can go back and just walk through them, obviously on a much, much smaller scale, not 150 miles worth, but it is nice just to kind of reconnect with nature. And you said, Brian, just to get a little bit into your back history, that you worked in nonprofits in Pittsburgh for quite a while, and so this was not really, I wouldn't say, a natural career move for you. What was alluring to this position? I mean, you've been on the job now 18 months. What was alluring to the position for you?
Well, in my spare time, all these years of doing work in urban environments, I would take a Saturday or a Sunday with my wife and kids, and we'd go explore something, right? Maybe the Butler Freeport Trail that connects here in Butler. Or we would go out to Ohio Pile and take a visit, or go up to Presque Isle near Erie and explore. And this job seemed like a very interesting way to help bring flourishing to some towns in western Pennsylvania, as well as get out on two wheels occasionally with my wife and kids. And so I do bring my kids occasionally out to the trail to ride if I'm out to meet people on a Saturday or Sunday, and they're great riders. The trail's perfect for kids because it's largely level, and there are lots of things to see and do. So I would say that my own work, I've really enjoyed this position so far and have met hundreds and hundreds of really amazing people over 150 miles.
Some people list this as a bucket list destination. Have you heard that from people?
Sure. It's a great bucket list item, right? If you're a rider who can go out and do 10 or 20 miles with a little bit of training, you can probably do 30 or 35 or 40 because the trail is largely level. And making it a bucket list by doing it over 2 or 3 or 4 days is really a fun lifetime achievement, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the folks who travel from faraway states or provinces will come here because they've heard about the Great Allegheny Passage. Some of them will also connect all the way to D.C. But in addition to just doing it once, if you do it from the other direction, you'll see things you never saw the first time. Or even just taking day trips and taking your time to see what's in the town, seeing historic sites, heritage sites, and finding a new restaurant or a new local dish is well worth taking your time along the trail. So it can be a bucket list check off, but it can also be a place to visit again and again.
About how far apart are the eight towns?
The eight towns are as close as 10 miles and no further than 19 miles apart.
So it's all reasonably close together.
Yep, and if you're riding at about 9 or 10 miles an hour, it's about an hour between towns at the least and maybe 2 hours at the most.
Yeah, that's not bad. Give us your website again, just in case people are wanting to check this out if they haven't.
Sure. You can find downloadable maps or links to our trail guide publication at www.gaptrail.org.
He's Brian Perry, Executive Director of the Allegheny Trail Alliance. Thanks so much for making the time, Brian. Really appreciated this, and I know I learned a lot because this was something that I really wasn't that familiar with.
Delighted to be here, and we'll see you on the Gap.
Yes, we got to get outside.
Yep, we'll do that. We'll do that relay. Just you and me. I'll do the first half. You do the second half.
Maybe next year.
All right, we'll train for it. Thanks to Pat Parker for producing the show. I'm Tyler Friel. She's Kayla Moles, and we'll do it again tomorrow. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 54-54. The pick 3 is 817-817. The pick 4 is 9453. The pick 5, 25407. And the wild ball for each of those is 2. And your treasure hunt, 6, 8, 10, 14, and 25. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Today's legislation will greatly affect your electric bill tomorrow. Co-op Owners for Political Action is a bipartisan political action committee representing the interests of cooperatives and their members. It brings important issues to the attention of your representatives on both the state and federal levels. Contributions are used to help fund campaigns of candidates who will speak for and protect the interests of electric cooperatives and their consumer owners. Your active engagements in Co-op Owners for Political Action aligns you with thousands of other electric co-op members, directors, and employees across the nation to make sure that the interests of rural electric consumers are understood by our legislators. Their support helps us to protect CEC's ability to provide safe, affordable, and reliable electric service. Please visit our website, central.coop, for more information. This is Emily Bartley for Central Electric Cooperative. Our tradition is to service, our responsibility is to safety. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Are you back to school ready? At Institute Hill Pharmacy in Butler, our knowledgeable and friendly staff can help you with all of your back to school prescription needs. We carry asthma, allergy, and diabetic medications. And when cold and flu season hits, we offer a variety of over-the-counter medications and speedy